Emergency medical services are little more than 30 years old in the Upper Peninsula and not much older nationwide. Of some 75 EMS organizations across the region, most of them are volunteer. We appreciate their service, but many of us don't really know how they work in our communities, nor what they're up against in staying viable. We'll look back on the history, current challenges, and new developments next on Media Meet. Welcome to WNMU's Media Meet. I'm Bill Hart. Our guests are UPEMS Director Bob Strzok and UPEMS Medical Director Dr. Dennis Whitehead. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
UPEMS is a public nonprofit service agency that's some 30 years old, a little older than that, actually.
Yes. I guess. UPEMS was set up, we were initially staffed in 1981 for the purpose of helping to develop emergency medical care in the Upper Peninsula.
Okay.
EMS was new at that time, and this was the first time in our area that a group was put together to help all of the ambulance services rescue people throughout the UP, and we remained viable in helping the communities since that time.
Okay. You described yourself as a kind of support group and resource agency and things that I've read. Does that fit?
That's correct. As the EMS abilities have grown throughout the years, our organization has done all of the things necessary at that time to help provide better emergency care in the communities. And we've worked as a resource agency in many ways in helping train people, put on educational programs, work with the physicians, the hospitals, the communities, whatever it took to have better emergency medical care in the UP.
How is the agency itself organized?
Well, there's a board of directors, which ultimately is the responsible entity for the organization. And then there's a staff of people. I've been the director since 1981, since we started. Mm-hmm. And then there's a tremendous group of a network of people throughout the UP that work together cooperatively as instructors, as helpers, as EMS personnel. And so it's a rather unique organization, unique in the country, in fact, that an area this large can have a functioning cooperative group that is actually working together to help people's lives.
What are your funding sources and those of local EMS operations you serve? I've read that unlike police and fire services, which are provided through local government by taxes and things like that, EMS agencies in Michigan receive no subsidies from the state or cities or townships. Is that correct?
No, not really.
Okay.
And there's two separate questions. More importantly, are they local EMS?
Right.
For our organization, UPEMS, it's a nonprofit organization. We have a contract with the state of Michigan that enables us to do certain things that benefit EMS.
Mm-hmm.
And then additionally, we get funds from United Ways, contributions, and other smaller sources.
Okay.
But more importantly for the communities are the ambulance services, the first responder groups. For round numbers, there's about 75 rescue groups in the Upper Peninsula. 25 of them are medical first responder organizations who are trained and equipped to take care of an emergency.
Yeah.
And the other 50 are the ambulance services that are able to take care of the emergency and then transport the patient. They're funded in many ways. They mostly all bill Medicaid, Medicaid, or private insurance. Some are fortunate that they do have local millages or township or city subsidies, but there is no funding source from the state.
Okay.
And that's unfortunate because certainly there's a need to have better financial resources to support local EMS because those are just dollars that are well spent and actually make a difference in saving someone's life.
Okay. From my count, about 80% of the EMS organizations are volunteer, but most personnel require some sort of state certification, I understand it, right?
Correct. And there are different levels. The highest level would be the EMT paramedic. And in Michigan, we also have intermediate EMTs that can do IVs and certain other advanced procedures that in some states aren't allowed. Basic EMTs generally have not been allowed to administer medications in the past, but that's evolved over the years. And we found that let's say somebody who has a low blood sugar, a hypoglycemic episode of diabetic, maybe it took too much insulin or for whatever reason their sugar got low, we are allowing them now in certain systems with the concurrence of the EMS medical director in that particular area. Mm-hmm. They can give some medications, they can administer sugar. I mean, if you look at it from a certain viewpoint, oxygen is a drug.
Yeah.
And every EMT has the ability to give that. Michigan also has first responders, and in fact, one of the few licensed first responders, one of the first ones, was Mishigami Township in Marquette County when I was EMS director many years ago,
okay.
when I first got involved with Bob and UPMS. So there are a lot of things in the UP that were firsts for the state of Michigan.
I see.
And it depends. Dickinson County was the first county in the state where all the public safety vehicles had automated defibrillators. And that's something that we're very proud of, too.
All right. How are volunteers recruited, and where do they come from?
Fortunately, there are people that want to volunteer for anything in a community, but certainly for EMS.
Mm-hmm.
And they're recruited in many ways. Most of it is word of mouth. They'll see somebody or they'll have an experience where they've seen where someone is really helped by their local rescue service, and they'll want to join. Or they'll maybe hear something on the radio or TV.
Mm-hmm.
But mostly it is word of mouth. People want to be able to do this. And unfortunately, as society is changing, there seem to be less and less people that want to volunteer.
Okay.
Now, that's impacted by various other factors. There's a cost of education. There's a time commitment. Mm-hmm. And it's a stressful thing to do to
sure.
want to be able to provide emergency care. But we still are fortunate in the Upper Peninsula that we have people willing to make that commitment, and just about every one of them that does is grateful that they did, because they have truly made a difference, and that's a very cool thing.
Every state has an agency responsible for EMS. You noted that there's no state subsidy, but what Michigan department has state authority over this area?
Department of Licensing and Regulation, I think, is the one that...
is the latest one.
Version
public
is...
Health Department.
Yeah, then they went to that, and now it's
right.
Department of Community Health.
Right.
Department of Community Health.
But they
Health,
have a licensing division for EMS that's in there.
Are they sensitive, do you think, to the rural challenges?
No.
Okay.
That's unfair, but they're unaware. They're sensitive to them, but they're totally unaware. And they're 400 miles away from here, they being the state office, and they're influenced by the larger populations, which have their own significant challenges, resources, and deficiencies, but that's their awareness zone. When they come up north, they don't come up north enough, and maybe that's okay,
yeah.
but they're not aware of the issues that affect long distances and weather and lack of population volunteers.
Okay.
So. No, they need to be more aware.
We also have fewer paid services. You know, as we talked about, the volunteers are so important throughout the UP. But in more urban areas, you have more for-profit organizations that are running the ambulance services,
okay.
big companies. And these are people that work professionally. They don't have another job, whereas most of the people that operate in the Upper Peninsula are true volunteers that have another job. They often leave their job to go out and respond and help their fellow citizens. With the problem that we have in the UP, they have a statewide regimen in terms of keeping your licensure up. And one of the first things that we recognized when UPEMS came on board was that we needed to be able to give good training to all the volunteers, because a lot of them, before we got started and put on a lot of educational sessions, had to go downstate, which is very difficult.
Yeah.
So it made it, I believe, is one of UPMS's greatest contributions to the area, is making education affordable and available.
It seems that UPEMS goes back almost as far as the Cook County Emergency Program set up by Dr. David Boyd, who was focused primarily on trauma care. That was more than 40 years ago. What did emergency resources and operations look like at that time? In our fledgling years of the UP, you mentioned there were a couple of guys who did things that were really firsts for the region.
Yeah, one of the people that I just can't say enough about was Dr. Dave Gilbert in Calumet, okay. and he trained the Mercy Ambulance crew. Cruz, and Jerry Primo is still president of UPMS and is the head of Mercy Ambulance.
Yeah.
And what Dave Gilbert did was he developed the first rural transporting paramedic service in the United States. It was in the UP, out of Calumet and in the Copper Country. And that was a tremendous boost to this area to be able to get that going. Okay. Because nobody else had done that. And with what Dave did, he showed that it could be done in a rural area.
Okay.
And in a rural area, advanced life support is something that is very precious. Because if you happen to get in an accident on a snowmobile grade near Ralph, you're going to be 2 hours before you get to a hospital, especially if it happens to be snowing out. So that golden hour is going to take place out in the field. The golden hour after somebody has trauma, that's usually when they're going to live or die, depending on what you do.
Yeah.
So it isn't the emergency doctor at the hospital that's going to save your life. It depends more on how skilled the people that are responding to you on the scene are. That is not the case in urban areas,
yeah,
where the emphasis is more on scoop and run, get them to the hospital as soon as possible. But in the UP, the hospitals are too far apart to do that.
I say, what if you're stuck in the sceney stretch?
Well, here is something that was a bit of an epiphany for me. I used to do a lot of driving around the UP, and partly Bob and I did a lot together. And I remember one time during a lake effect snowstorm right in the sceney stretch, I was trying to get around a logging truck. And I thought, you know, if I did, there'd be a car coming the other way. And what if I got in an accident in the middle of the sceney stretch? And what I started thinking was a type of paradigm where if somebody did get in a bad car accident in the middle of the sceney stretch, is EMS evolved enough in the UP that that person would survive? And that's kind of what I brought to the UP EMS board, mm-hmm, that in those areas around the UP, and there are many of them, just mm-hmm, like in the sceney stretch, if somebody has an accident, how are we going to help that person to survive?
Sure.
And that's actually guided a lot of what we've done in terms of getting people to buy into that. Paramedic intercepts, whereas you have a basic ambulance service, as you do in most rural areas, they first encounter the patient, they call for a paramedic ambulance to come and assist them and bring the patient to the hospital.
Okay.
These last two questions and comments are tied together because we've mentioned that in the Upper Peninsula, we had many pioneers that have done the right thing to make it better. And Dr. Whitehead is certainly one of those folks who took the reins from Dr. Gilbert and Dr. DeLoof and a number of other folks.
First board-certified emergency medicine guy up here, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, 1988. I was lucky. We got board certification in emergency medicine just when I finished my training at Michigan State, and some people don't know that emergency medicine was actually founded in Lansing,
okay,
under John Wiggenstein, who was quite a visionary himself. I was very privileged to study under him.
Great.
Well, that ties in, again, mm-hmm, also, because this all started, and in the UP we had these pioneers that did things because they made common sense, they did the right thing to do, and it worked. Well, then as the bureaucracy evolved and Lansing gets involved, trying to make more of a one-size-fits-all protocol,
right,
some of the things that we did and have been doing that are the right thing to do based on our own sceney stretches are now being diminished because it doesn't fit somewhere else in an urban area. And we need to get back to the community perspective of what's good for these individual communities, and if it's going to be better than anywhere else in the state, let's have it. And we have a lot of the pieces, but we need to make sure that communities are aware that they have that responsibility, the local level, to do as much as they can.
Okay.
As a general thing, mm-hmm, EMS personnel have to be more skilled in rural areas than they do in urban areas. And unfortunately, most of the studies, most of the regulations are promulgated by people who are at university centers, which are in big cities.
Yeah.
But in rural areas such as the UP, the EMTs and paramedics spend a lot more time with the patient than they do downstate. And we just can't stress that enough. That's how important these volunteers are, these people that give their time and their energy to their fellow citizens and people in their community. They really deserve a lot of credit because they truly do help save lives in this area.
We can have the best facilities and the best docs, but if we don't have good first responders and good EMTs, it's not going to make any difference.
Okay. I'd like to take a moment here to remind our television viewers and particularly our radio audience that we're talking about EMS in the Upper Peninsula with UP EMS Director Bob Strzok and UP EMS Medical Director Dr. Dennis Whitehead. It seems that part of what we've seen since in a whole series of stages is in emergency medicine is extending the reach of the hospital. First with an ambulance, now it looks like we'll have other options available. We have ambulance services, I've read, that cover 400 square miles in the UP. That's a lot for one service. How have the stages advanced to bring more resources to bear, you think? Various stages.
Well, as I mentioned, the training has a lot to do with it. The state has also seen the wisdom of making the protocols that the EMTs and paramedics operate under a bit more flexible,
Okay. Based
on what the needs of the area are. And I've realized that in certain areas where I've been an EMS director, Marquette County and Dickinson County, that there are nurses and there are other skilled medical professionals that may live in a certain area. And they may not exactly be covered under the EMS Act, but I've given my permission for them to go ahead and if they're able to practice under the scope of their license to help out on an EMS run. We've had a lot of nurses and other personnel help out the EMS volunteers and paramedics if they're able to. Now, that has to be done with the concurrence of the medical director, of course, but we found that if you use what you have and what would a reasonable and prudent person do given their level of training and experience if they have a medical emergency in front of them, it usually works out pretty well. And there are often people in small towns and in communities where there are others that can help the EMS system.
What about information and communications? It seems to have transformed every other area of our lives. What about EMS?
I remember the days when we were going around trying to encourage people to have portable radios because they were connected with a landline to their ambulance and eventually the wires snapped. And now you can communicate everywhere with anything, and there's a huge potential for the diagnostic capabilities of the ambulance personnel doing things directly with the physicians.
I mean, cell phone coverage extends almost everywhere in the UP now.
Yeah.
You know, unless you're in the shade of some iron-covered mountain, you know, you're probably going to be able to get a signal almost everywhere. And that's a tremendous help. Sometimes the radio that we've used for years and years gets blocked.
Sure.
And we have people calling in on a cell phone. And we have better radio communications all around. It has become less of a problem.
What about distance between hospitals, transport and distances between hospitals? Big factor here?
Oh, it is.
For us?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, let's just say if you're downstate and you get brought to a smaller hospital in the Detroit area, and they say, well, you need to go to a bigger place like Henry Ford or the University of Michigan or whatever, it's not that far.
Yeah.
If you're critically injured in an accident in Iron Mountain or if you're in the Sioux, you're going to need to go to a level 2 trauma center, and that's Marquette General is the only one that's in the Upper Peninsula. And in the past, there have been some efforts to try to get air medical services in the UP, and in fact, that was recognized very early on in the 80s, but for one reason or another, it never came to pass. We've had helicopters come out of Duluth and Green Bay, and also from Traverse City to a certain extent that have come into the Upper Peninsula. But just now we've got a fixed-wing air ambulance services that, as of last October, is based in Iron Mountain.
We're going to talk about that in just a minute.
Yeah, that's actually pretty exciting. I think that's a big step forward in terms of getting people rather quickly from smaller hospitals to the higher levels of care that they actually need.
At the state level, there have been questions. You had mentioned that the team seemed to be pretty good at knowing what to do if they're, you know, confronted with an emergency. But there have been questions over what emergency medical technicians should be allowed to do. I know early in 2012, an initiative was established to add uniformity to EMS standards, and that resulted in a proposal to, which appeared to severely limit instruments and devices EMTs are permitted to use. What happened to that proposal?
Well, overall, the paradox is, as EMS is evolving and is becoming more accepted as a component of medicine, then there's a trend to standardize it. So it's more similar to do things in this state, this state, this state. Okay. And as you similarize things, you reduce the ability to be innovative and the things that...
Or to adapt.
Mm-hmm. Whereas in the past, we in the UP, we did what was right, did our own thing, and some of it was extraordinary. Well, recently, the Michigan is adopting the national standards of EMS, and those national standards call for specific roles and things to be done, some of which we used to do. Now they're saying, well, because nationwide, they can't meet the average, so no one can do it. And locally, it impacted us. Our first responders, as Dr. White had mentioned, were the first in the state. And they've been doing great things because they're 40 miles from a hospital. Mm-hmm. But the state decided some of the tools they had were no longer fitting into this standard model.
What tools, like a glucometer?
A glucometer was one of them. Test blood sugars, do some better direct airway maneuvers.
No medicine, no aspirin, no...
I'm grateful that this show is not seen in Lansing. Okay. Because there are marked benefits to being far from the state capital.
Okay.
That's all I'm going to say.
All right. But as far as you're concerned, then, the proposal is not an imposition right now. I mean, it was
it's a done
abandoned.
Deal. It's in effect. It is in effect.
It's in effect.
There's kind of they're working it out, but it's in effect. And it diminishes
and
the
again,
capacity.
This is the influence of major medical centers. You know, people think that one size does fit all.
Yeah.
A lot of those people haven't been in the UP.
A first responder in the urban areas is the police department or a fire department alongside of the ambulance, and they come and help out. And so it's good that they're trained, but they have ambulance capacities. Our first responders in the Upper Peninsulas, they're 30, 40 miles away, and they're going to be with that patient for an hour or more. They need the tools to take care of that person.
And that's the value of having things like automated defibrillators, police cars.
Yeah.
Because they are very often the first people to the scene. I mean, if you get involved, if somebody has a heart attack in Foster City, just to pick a place, and it's at 2 o'clock in the morning, and there happens to be a state police car that's somewhere nearby, whether that person lives or dies depends on whether or not they get the most important drug if they're in ventricular fibrillation. And that drug is electricity. Okay. They need to be shocked out of it. Mm-hmm. So if they can get the appropriate shock within 5 minutes, they'll go on and they'll continue to live and they'll be normal.
Yeah.
If the crew gets called out in the middle of the night and it takes 15, 20 minutes for them to get there, if they do get their heart going again, you're not going to be able to get the brain going again.
I see.
And you're going to be left with somebody who wasn't the same as before.
Okay.
And most of us probably wouldn't want to be in that position, I think.
It seems ironic because the categories of care seem to have increased as we've added more and more specialties, you know, to EMS. You have cardiac, respiratory. You have a lot of areas where it might have been confined at one time to trauma, you know, in the very early days of EMS. Now you have a lot of other things that people respond to routinely. I understand a glucometer is standard equipment in some ambulances because it's so common that people would have
a
blood sugar problem.
Yeah. I mean, again, if you're 4 or 5 minutes from a hospital having a relatively low blood sugar where you may be, you know, comatose, it's probably not going to kill off your brain cells. If you spend an hour like that, it will.
Yeah.
And that's what we need to prevent. And that's why we need to put the right tools in the hands of the people that are out in the field.
Let's talk about new developments here. It was better prospects for rapid response and transport that pulled these concerns together. I think the military developed ground and air transport really coming into its own with helicopter and fixed wing sorts of rescue and care services. Helicopters mainly used for short distances. Fixed wing for longer runs, and there are only a few air ambulance services in the state. You said there's something that's new for our region in that
right,
regard.
Right, the fixed wing air ambulance is based in Iron Mountain now. Finally, we have an aeromedical service that's based in the Upper Peninsula.
Okay.
And obviously the good thing about this...
You said they had to come from Traverse City before?
Yeah, okay. Green Bay, Traverse City, and Duluth were primarily the areas. I think Marshfield once in a while would send a helicopter up into the Upper Peninsula, but it's not very often.
Okay.
And with a fixed wing being based here, what it does, it eliminates that dead leg that comes at the beginning. For instance, the years I practiced in Iron Mountain, Eagle 3 ambulance out of Green Bay, they do a great job, but they're 90 miles away.
Yeah.
And that dead leg where they don't have the patient is at the beginning. They have to come up to Iron Mountain, and then the patient leg is at the end.
Yeah.
Now with having...
Sort of reverses everything.
Yeah, with having something based in the Upper Peninsula, you're going to get the patient leg in the front. Now, of course, not every patient is going to come out of Iron Mountain, but the fixed-wing turboprop engine that they have on the plane, which is much bigger than a helicopter,
yeah,
it can take bigger patients, that travels at 300 miles an hour. So they get from one place to another pretty fast. Nothing in the UP is more than 45 minutes away once they get scrambled.
Fixed-wing aircraft are known for having a lot more room for technicians to do the job.
A lot more room. They can fly in worse weather, which mm-hmm. certainly is a big factor in
There's an ice factor on those?
Oh, most definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's more ice here flying around than anywhere in the United States.
Okay. With the expansion of all these modalities, safety has been a big concern. Any big concerns about occupational fatality rate or accident rate or anything among EMTs themselves, Bob? Or we seem to be a pretty good record?
Well, I think in the Upper Peninsula we have a good record. It's a strenuous adventure because sometimes you'll have an ambulance and they're taking people out of a difficult situation, middle of a night, snowstorm, and so there's certainly occupational inherent injuries and problems.
Okay.
And that's something that we need to be aware of, especially when we're considering a lot of our EMS personnel are volunteer. And they're doing this because they help people. They do take a risk. Of course, region-wide, we're trying to mitigate that any way we can.
Okay. I've heard it said that a lack of job opportunities has some EMTs leaving Michigan to pursue advanced training for employment in a field elsewhere. Are you seeing this kind of thing? I mean, these are people obviously have some aspirations to doing emergency work, but they're having to leave in order to get to do it.
Yeah, they're either leaving the state or they're leaving EMS to mm-hmm. work in another field that maybe appreciates an EMT license or an EMS background.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of training involved. To be a first responder, it's 100 hours. To be an EMT, perhaps 250 hours. If you want to be a paramedic, about 1,500 hours. So people have this investment that they put into it. And then if they want to do something with it, and if they're in a town, mm-hmm. if the volunteers are making $2 an hour or less, they may say, I want to go somewhere because I really like this field and I want to do something with it. Mm-hmm. Or if they're trying to support a family and they're spending all this time away with stuff, they have to realize, I can't volunteer anymore because I can't afford it. And that comes back to the community investment and appreciation of EMS. It takes money somehow, some way, to have a good thing happen.
Okay.
And some people will leave the area because you can get a full-time job downstate or in Wisconsin that we can't offer in the Upper Peninsula. And that's a huge loss for our area. That's the most important resource, our people, our personnel. We can't lose them.
Okay. I'm afraid that's all the time we have. We've been talking about emergency medical services in the Upper Peninsula with UP EMS Director Bob Strzok and UP EMS Medical Director Dennis Whitehead. Thank you both for being here.
Thank you, Will.
I'm Bill Hart. Thanks for joining us on Media Meet.
The preceding program was produced in studios located in the Edgar L. Hardin Learning Resources Center by WNMU-TV, Northern Michigan University Public Television.